Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
$1 billion. Yes, that is the budget surplus that we're enjoying here in Arizona. Budget talks happening right now down at the Capitol. In fact, yesterday we sat down with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kathy Hoffman, to talk a little bit about that budget and precisely how much of that money is going to go to education. Here's what she had to say.
We saw a budget leaked out of the Senate from the Republican leadership that was leaked out that had a lot of cuts to it had less funding for education than what the governor had proposed. So, for example, the governor had proposed in his budget proposal that we have money for the Teachers Academy, but that was not included in this budget that was leaked out of the Senate recently.
Yeah, we saw a budget that came out of the Republican side, and frankly, it's hard to keep people accountable for that when it's a draft. I mean, nothing's been decided yet. But the concerns here are of the $1 billion surplus, how much of that is going to be spent on education? I think the public has made that pretty well known. It's an important issue. It absolutely changed the election last year here in Arizona. Governor Ducey got behind more education funding and wants to put $300 million in this year. Democrats want to put an extra $200 million more than that in. And Republicans apparently don't even want to put that much in, less than what the governor said. So we're going to have to figure this out, but it may come down to the teachers and parents and people who think education is the number one thing in Arizona getting back down to the legislature and making their voices heard. This is important. Let's get our education funding at least back to where it was 11 years ago in 2008.
Right. You've got a lot of teachers that are hoping that they're going to get out of school before this budget is passed for that very reason, Barry. They want to be down there. They want to be having pressure put on lawmakers in order to get money into classrooms, to get money into the coffers of school districts. And we know that of the $300 million that the governor says he wants to put aside for schools, about $165 million of that is to keep up with the second half of the promised 20 by 2020, the 20% pay increase
right
for teachers that they fought for last year. And that was something that Kathy Hoffman, again, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, is keeping a very, very close eye on. Here's why.
We absolutely need to make sure that the governor and the legislature stick to their 20 by 2020 plan. And that I've always said that's a great first step. That is dollars going straight to our teachers and our classrooms that are desperately needed.
And they are desperately needed because when you look at how money isn't being invested with our students and like the per pupil spending, for instance, OK,
yeah,
you go back to 2008, it was roughly $5,200 a student. $5,200, 2008. Last year, it was $4,500.
Yeah, I mean, we're spending $700 less per student today than we did 11 years ago. So no one, forget about inflation. Forget about even staying even. We're paying less than we did 11 years ago.
Go ahead.
And that's affected on our students. I mean, that has to have an effect on teacher retention, which we're seeing. We're using 20, 25-year-old books. We don't have the money there to do an adequate job. And, you know, whenever I say this, people always say, well, number one, you know, money doesn't solve all problems.
Yeah,
money doesn't
that.
Make a good education.
I hear that.
Okay, I get you. I understand that Washington, D.C. and Chicago have bad school systems. I get that. But let's be real about something. You have to put at least adequate funding in to get to a point that the education and the services to our students, to our kids, is adequate. That's it. If you're happy being the 44th best school system out of 50 in the United States, then knock yourself out. I guess we're okay. But I think most of us, whether we have kids or not, want a better school system so we can attract more businesses, so the state's more attractive, so we keep businesses. This is important overall to the economy as well as to our families.
When you talk about 44th, let's dive into that a little bit, because the U.S. News and World Report is out with their annual ranking of states and when it comes to education, and they've now placed Arizona 44th best state when it comes to educating our children, which means, you know, we're 43 or better than us at this. That's not...
We're in bad company here. I mean, you talk about Mississippi and Louisiana and Alaska. I mean, this is Alabama. These aren't states we want to be tied to when we're talking about the education of our kids. You want to be tied to Washington State. You want to be tied to smart places where they've got, like Texas, where they've got some tech companies coming there where they've got good schools, good colleges. You want to have that there because that is what attracts not just people, but businesses and higher paying businesses to the state.
Well, you talk about attracting businesses and people to our state. Barry, it's what keeps people here.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because my social circle in my 20s was huge. I'm not saying this to brag. I'm saying
you're
it to prove
popular.
A point. No, I mean, like I loved the 20s. I had so many friends here that were great friends. And most of them were here even through the beginning of my 30s. But as soon as they started having children, as soon as that next milestone in their life, they'd all gotten married here in the Valley, right? They all bought houses here in the Valley. They were starting very lucrative careers here in the Valley. As soon as the discussion of children or as the first child was born, you know what happened? I've got one in Philadelphia. I've got a ton in Denver. I've got some in Charlotte. They all left the state. One is in Austin. And these were really close friends of mine that said, you know what? We're leaving because we don't like, and it wasn't the only aspect, but it was one of the aspects. They were concerned about the level of education that their child would receive in Arizona.
Yeah.
Of course, there were other factors involved,
yeah.
Of course, but that was one that routinely came up in conversation. So you are not only not attracting businesses and highly educated people to our state when we rank 44th on the list of U.S. News and World Report's best states when it comes to educating kids. You have a lot of very talented, educated people who currently live here that are going to leave.
We're losing people. And this is just it's just one of these things where it's the right thing to do. And the people have spoken. If you're wondering why the governor changed his tune last year and said we're going to do 20 for 20 and by 20, we're going to really put more funding into teacher salaries. The reason was the polls were telling him that if you don't do this, you're going to lose an election. The polls told the Republicans, if you don't do this, you're going to lose elections in the legislature. And they heard that, and they have to keep hearing it. They have to keep being reminded that this is a priority, if not the priority in the state of Arizona, that education funding is important to us. And we have to keep making that point clear. Now, there's other things here, too. The Republican legislature, one of the things they want to do with some of the surplus money is use it to pay down debt because we took out loans or sold off some of our public buildings. And they want to kind of get rid of that debt and get ourselves back to even. Okay. I'm okay with that. But we have to make sure the schools are properly funded. And we have to commit to that on an annual basis to get us back, not just to where we were 11 years ago, my goodness, but beyond that to where we're, look, put us 25th in the country. Let us be average. Can we just be average one time in education? Wouldn't that be exciting?
Wouldn't you be excited if we were just 30th even?
30th would be fantastic.
I mean, like, yeah, it's not going to be perfection, but let's make some progress here.
Right.
And we also know that a lot of the communities, a lot of people that are listening to us right now, you're going to have these districts coming to you for bonds and overrides here soon. And that's where, you know, you got to put your money where your mouth is. If education is important to you, then I would expect to see the majority of those bonds and overrides pass. Immigration is another critical issue here in Arizona. Education is one, immigration's two. They kind of jockey for the top two spots and issues facing our state. Well, the president has come out with an immigration plan. The thoughts on it? Well, we're hearing from the Arizona delegation. We're going to bring that more to you.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
It was right around this time yesterday you tuned in to listen to Bruce and myself. You heard the president, President Donald Trump, talking immigration. In particular,
we cherish the open door that we want to create for our country. But a big proportion of those immigrants must come in through merit and skill.
All right. That's the president talking about his new immigration plan. A lot of that focusing on legal immigration. What type of person do we want to give a green card to? And he wants to change that to a merit-based system. But there was a lot more in that speech just beyond legal immigration.
Yeah, look, there needs to be a balance of this. We've always had, you know, we've had the Statue of Liberty there. We've always been the beacon on the hill where people can look for freedom and liberty and a place to go to protect themselves. We've always had that. We had it from Europe, from Eastern Europe, and now from, unfortunately, from Latin America and South America, we're starting to see some of that as well. But I agree that we should certainly try to get people in here who are smart and have the ability to really contribute to the country. But I don't think we should overlook that people without those skills are also contributing. We've always had in this country guest worker programs where people would come in and help us pick crops or help us. I mean, even up in wine country, there's people that come in, they pick the grapes, they get everything ready, and then they go back home. There must be ways to balance all that out. But politically, Pamela, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, and I think that the evidence that it's not going to happen, you could just see right here within our own Arizona delegation. You've got Congresswoman, Democratic Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick reacting to the president's proposal. Here's what she has to say.
It doesn't address a pathway to citizenship for DACA recipients. That's just one example. Dreamers weren't included.
And then on the Republican side for Arizona Congressman, you have Andy Biggs saying this.
I think some of the humanitarian issues that he mentioned are important as well, because some of our churches, NGOs, and organizations that are providing assistance are frankly overwhelmed.
I mean, it's a multi-pronged issue down along the border. I mean, it is a border security issue. It is a humanitarian issue, of which needs to be fixed with a policy issue. But we can't even seem to get people on the same page as to what issue do we want to tackle. And don't tell me immigration, because that's too big to encompass one bill, one piece of legislation. And everybody talks about comprehensive immigration. That sounds great.
Yeah,
that sounds great. In all reality, you go to any lawmaker and they're going to say, we want comprehensive immigration. Everybody wants comprehensive immigration. The thing of the matter is, it seems to be too big. It's like an elephant. Like, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time. You've got to break it down. And if you can't even talk about what you need to prioritize in order to break it down, it's a non-starter.
I'm going to disagree just a little bit with you, because I think with real leadership, with proper leadership, you could do comprehensive. And the reason it's difficult to break it down and do the pieces is one piece might be on one side, one piece might be on the other side. Maybe there's a way to pass them both at the same time, but there has to be give and take. No, neither party is going to vote just for the priorities of the other party. You have to have a balance. And where I think President Trump could lead here, and he was doing that initially. If you remember back a couple of years, he had Chuck Pelosi and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. He had them in the Oval Office. It was broadcast, and they had a meeting about this. And he said he wanted to get to a decision. He wanted to get to comprehensive immigration. And there's a way to do that, to give the president the border wall funding he wants, to do something with DACA that's reasonable that people accept. You don't have to do the whole thing, but you can do a part of it comprehensively, where you're giving some to both sides and make steps in that direction. The thing that's wild is, if you look at the polling, the American people, the vast majority of people, they want border security, but they also want DACA recipients to figure out a way to stay here legally. There's things that the people want. And if the politicians would just together focus on those things, I think they'd both be popular.
Yeah, well, when you talk about comprehensive versus dissecting it one piece at a time, the key word that you use there, though, Barry, is leadership.
Yeah.
If we have leadership, I don't see leadership anywhere these days. I don't see leadership on the R's. I don't see leadership with the D's. I see everybody out for themselves. And what's going to get me elected next? It's not about the greater good or what's best for the country. It's about what's best for my next reelection. Hence the reason why I think we've got 24 Democrats that are now running. That's just crazy talk.
Yeah.
But it's not about leadership. It's not about what's best for this country. And so comprehensive, if it could be done, I believe it would have been done, because we've had better leadership in years past than we do right now, and it never happened.
President Trump could do it. Because the people,
I don't buy it.
Because here's what happened a few years ago. You remember they had the Gang of Eight or whatever it was, and it was John McCain and others and Marco Rubio, and they were going to work with the Democrats. They did. They passed comprehensive immigration reform out of the Senate, and then the right wing really came down hard and were beating him up. And Rubio even had to withdraw his name from it, and it hurt him later. Even in the presidential election, people were still talking about it. So you have to have someone who's willing to withstand the bullets from the far left or the far right of their own party. President Trump could absorb those bullets on the right. He can take the hit and survive.
Okay,
if he wanted to.
He could take the hit.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll play along. He could take the hit. He's never going to do that.
He made noises like he was, but now
on.
I agree with you, he won't.
No, but
I agree,
come on. Give me another example of when this president has taken the hits from the far right. When the president has taken hits from his base. This president has always catered to his base.
Right.
So to say he's going to stand up to them and say, I can take these hits, he needs them to get reelected in 2020. Hence the reason why this isn't going to happen.
I agree with you now. It's too late now and it's too close to the election. And he's already decided his strategy, which is just to try to turn out his base, not to expand his popularity. And it's a shame because I think a year and a half ago, he had an opportunity to lead the country and it would have worked. I think it would have worked and he would have come out of it just fine. But he chose not to do it.
She's a mega celebrity with 150 million followers on Instagram and says social media has been terrible for her generation. We'll tell you who it is and why she said it next here on KTAR News.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
You know, a lot of discussion has taken place over the last few years regarding social media and the trials and tribulations that can come along with it. And a lot of that discussion has been focused on young people, and rightfully so. And it was interesting to me yesterday, Barry, that you had a superstar out there, Selena Gomez, who was being interviewed regarding this new movie she has coming out. And within that press conference, they were talking about like the social commentary that was kind of underlying in the movie. And some of it is the pressures that teenagers are dealing with and a lot of that coming from social media. And take a listen to what Selena Gomez had to say about it, because it struck me as strange that she would say it, because there's 150 million people that follow her on Instagram. So there's a business side of this, but there's also just a human side of it. Take a listen.
Our world is going through a lot, obviously, but I would say for my generation specifically, social media has really been terrible for my generation. I understand that it's amazing to use your platform, but it does scare me when you see how exposed that these young girls and young boys are, and they're not really aware of the news or anything going on. It's a very, I think it's dangerous for sure.
Do you think it's dangerous? Do you think that social media has been terrible for this younger generation?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good thing. I think there's a lot of great from the technology of the phones and the communication, the ability for parents to talk to their kids or text to them at different times that we didn't have before. I think all that's very good. But yeah, social media as a whole, I don't think it's a good thing. Kids are staring at their phones. They're addicted to them. There's studies now about that. And the nastiness that you mentioned earlier, that used to happen at the lunch table or on the school bus, now can carry back into your home. It can be 24 hours a day. And it allows not just the worst of kids, it allows the worst of everybody to come out. People feel amazingly emboldened by what they can say when they're not looking at you in the face.
Absolutely. They can sit behind a keyboard, type out whatever they want
that
they would never, ever
say
to your face, but they feel emboldened in order to do it with the keyboard in front of them.
We had a thing, and I know you've had bad emails and other things.
Exchanges,
sure you have.
Yeah, yes,
I have too over the years. And I'm always surprised by how I can just disarm them by saying, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. I hope you continue listening and give us another try. Or so I say something just nice. I completely don't go back at them. I just say something nice. And the next email I get for them 100% of the time is, I can't believe you responded. I was going crazy. Like, all of a sudden, they turn back into a normal person. They turn back into the pleasant person they would normally be.
Not a troll.
And all the vitriol, and exactly, that goes away. But people have this strange courage, keyboard courage, to say these nasty things. It's almost like they take on a different persona.
And they just fire it off, that missive, and then they think that it just lives out there in the ether. But it impacts people.
Yeah.
It impacts our young people, hence the reason why you've got Selena Gomez there saying social media has been terrible for my generation. But we talk to our kids about it, you know, brush it off, let it roll off your back, sticks and stones, don't be friends with them, stay away from them, ignore them, unfriend them, block them. You know, there's so much of this really knee-jerk kind of advice that parents will give their kids when they're struggling with this. And I think it's important to know that's not easy to do. It's not easy just to walk away from a friendship that may have turned. Helping kids through that difficult time is what needs to be done, because even adults are struggling with it.
Yeah.
And you've go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, with kids also, you know, it's easy to say unfriend them, but if you don't friend those people, now you don't know what's going on in the world, in your world, the kids' world. They don't know what's going on socially. There's a positive and a negative. There's definitely a positive to turning it off and not being there. I mean, look, kids get upset now that four of their friends go out and didn't invite them. I mean, there's all sorts of things that happen, but if you're off social media, how do you even know they're going out? Maybe you don't know that you were invited to something. It's very difficult to just turn it off altogether.
But you also don't know that you're missing out.
Right.
Do you see? There's kind of like two sides of that story. But adults struggle with this as well. And I want to talk about the story I found, which is really interesting to me. Marcus Gilbert, former Pittsburgh Steeler, now a newly minted Arizona Cardinal. He went through a little bit of a tough season in 2016. He had a whole string of injuries. There was a suspension, performance-enhancing drugs. He struggled. And he struggled in a city that I know very well, Pittsburgh and the Steeler Nation, which can love you and they can also turn on a dime and rip you to shreds the next minute. And that's precisely what they did with him. And he said that he felt like he disappointed a lot of people. And soon thereafter, the comments, the tweets, the posts about his ability as a football player, some of the personal attacks that he was getting, all of these unmet expectations and hurtful things that were being said about him, made him seek help.
Yeah.
He actually went and got a therapist to help him through that.
Yeah. No, and you know what? I get it. I mean, if you're a young athlete, you're paid a lot of money, the expectations of the fans are huge, and if you don't perform up to those expectations, people can be, if their team doesn't win, people are ruthless. And I can only imagine how much grief a player like him takes, especially someone with a $30 million contract, high expectations, and then he gets hurt and he can't perform the way he did before. It's not that he's not trying, but people are going to be really upset. And when it's constant, again, with the phone, every time you open your phone, you've got notices from Twitter, you got notices from Facebook, everything that you're on, people are ripping you. And they're doing it in a nasty, nasty way, wishing your injury would last longer, wishing you were hurt so bad you couldn't play at all. Just the worst things you could hear of, bringing your family into it. I mean, it just is disgusting. It really is.
But I admire Marcus Gilbert for coming out and talking about turning to therapy to deal with the social media trolls, because he's a really strong athlete. He's a grown man, dog. And he went and got a therapist to help him out for it. Because if you look at the flip side of it, Philadelphia Eagles let their middle linebacker, Jordan Hicks, leave. Okay, so Jordan Hicks, former, you know, Philadelphia Eagle, he was asked about, you know, critics and the way people have talked about him. He said at the end of the day, if I'm worried about what other people are thinking, I'm wasting my time. There's going to be a million things out there. Not just about playing and every little thing that the fans can pick up on. So for me, I just focus on my team. And that's great.
Yeah.
But and that very well may be his standpoint. That's cool. I'm not here to tell you what you got to do, man. But that's what everybody says. You know, the armor's up. I'm good. This doesn't bother me. I let it roll off my back. To have somebody say, no, it struggled. I struggled with it. I have a very young son at home. I'm a dad.
Right.
I want to set a good example for him. I didn't want to have this like down mood, that down energy around me to compromise my family. So he had to find some tools. He had to find some coping mechanisms. And I think that there are a lot of people out there, young people and adults, that need to do that as well.
Yeah. Good for him for recognizing the effect it was having on him and on his family and how he was, you know, working with his son. And he addressed it. And that's good. And then, as you said, turn some of it off. You know, you don't have to be on Twitter. You don't have to. If the negative stuff's there, you don't have to do it. I think Gilbert's going to find a much better home here in Phoenix.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the history here. We don't have the expectations here yet. And frankly, we're a much tamer sports market than Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Our media is nicer. Our fans are nicer. Even if you're not performing, I'm sure there's still some negatives, but I doubt it's to the extent it is in Pittsburgh.
Hey, you know what? We can all use a couple extra dollars, right? How about 1,000 of them? Well, then just text the word cash to 411923. Listen for your name to be called on air weekdays, 7:45 in the morning, 4:45 in the afternoon. You could be the next KTAR Call for Cash $1,000 winner. Just text the word cash right now to 411923. Well, we have unpacked a lot of news here for you, not only today, but this entire week here on KTAR. So we're going to try to finish it off on an up note, restoring your faith in humanity. I'm going to try to do it next here for you on KTAR News.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
A lot of people may be headed to Sky Harbor Airport, flying away for a vacation. We've got Memorial Day coming up. A lot of people may be also hitting up Sky Harbor today because they're coming back from some sort of business meeting. So if I were to ask you, Barry, again, we've got Barry Markson sitting in for Bruce St. James here today. If I were to ask you, what is the typical Sky Harbor passenger look like? Conjure that up in your mind right now. Who is that?
It's me. Don't we all think we're the typical everything, right? We all think that about ourselves. I would have thought it's, I think it's a male, a businessman in his 40s or 50s, somebody who travels a lot for work. That's what I would envision the typical air traveler in Phoenix to be.
All right. I think that that's what a lot of people would have guessed. And I would have been right there with you. And guess what? We all would have been wrong.
We're wrong.
We're wrong. There's this aviation marketing group out there that did a survey at passengers at Phoenix Sky Harbor. Here's what they found out. That the average, typical person flying at Sky Harbor is college educated, 43-year-old woman who's traveling not for business, but for leisure, and has a household income of more than $100,000.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I would not have expected that.
Neither would I.
And if you would have said a female business traveler, sure. I said okay, but for leisure. But what I wasn't thinking about is that we are a destination. People come here on vacation. So we must have an awful lot of women who fly out here on vacation, whether it's with their families or with other women, whatever. And in addition to women who live here who travel on their own. So that but I agree, that surprised me.
Yeah, whether it was, you know, a male or a female, not a big deal. Leisure, I mean, yeah. I also wonder when this survey was taken because, if they're doing it, and they said they did it in January. Okay, yeah. You're going to have a lot of people who come here at that point in time. But here's the other outstanding statistic in this latest survey that went, 68% of people flying in and out of Sky Harbor based on this survey have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And I think the statistic in Arizona for people with bachelor's degrees is around 25 or 28% of the population has one. So that's high. That means people with bachelor's degrees definitely fly more than those with don't. And also that 52% of the people flying have an annual household income of greater than $100,000. So, and 24% or less, and 24% didn't answer. So I guess flying, you could say, is definitely more for people who have a little bit more wealth or a little more income, at least, which I suppose makes sense. It's not inexpensive to fly.
It's expensive. Yeah. There are times where it gets super expensive. I was looking for a ticket back for Riley. She's heading back east this summer with my sister for a little while. And it was just one way, to do the whole Southwest thing. And there were specific dates that I had to fly. One way.
Yeah.
$700.
Wow.
Now, that's not typical.
Yeah.
Well, I recognize that's the exception, not the norm. But I was like, good night, Irene. Are you serious? There's no way.
It's the airlines finally figured out they don't have to discount everything. They just keep charging more and more. But you saw the recent sale about going to Hawaii for Phoenix. You see that?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
But with the bachelor's degree, that would kind of go along with if you had more of a business traveler. I would expect that number if the average was a business traveler. But some really interesting details coming out of who's the typical Sky Harbor Airport passenger. Well, we've unpacked a lot for you here today. We're heading into the weekend, so let's leave it on a high note with restoring your faith in humanity. And I love when I can keep it right here in Arizona because I know that there are people here in our state that are doing some amazing things. So I want to take you out to Chandler, kind of my neck of the woods when it comes to the valley here. And there's an Arby's. Yep, there's an Arby's. It's lunchtime, right? Everyone's thinking about food. This Arby's is near Queen Creek and Alma School Road. And what they've been doing is pretty spectacular. They've got a regular customer. His name is Doug. He's considered family. He's also a World War II veteran. He's 98 years old. And Arby's is his favorite. They even have his order down to a T. They know exactly what he likes. And he'd come in all the time. I said, again, there's like family here. But for the last few months, he hasn't been able to get in, right? He lives at an assisted living home about 5 miles away from the fast food restaurant. And so this Arby's makes sure that he gets his favorite meal. Somebody from the staff makes sure to get him his food. They drive it over to the assisted living home. It's about, like I said, 5 miles away to deliver his favorite meal, to see him, to say hi, to check on him. Everybody loves him. And not only do they take it to him, they decided last year that they were going to give him Arby's for life.
Oh,
free.
That's awesome.
You know, it's the small things.
Yeah.
Again, even though we live in such a big city, there are these small community connections.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah,
taking care of our own.
Appreciating each other.
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you filling in here today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I also appreciate everybody else on the other side of the glass there. We got Tommy. Tommy, why you bugging? Super producer Stevie Z and Bob McClay.